This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. Mike here, and you're listening to the Conquering Columbus podcast. On this episode of the show, Josh and I got the chance to chat with Bradley Kaplan, CEO and founder of Lion Cubs Cookies. You may have seen their store in Grandview, and you maybe have even tried one of their delicious cookies. And if you have, there's no way you'd know that Brad got his start baking by Googling a recipe. Here he is talking about just that.
I've never baked anything in my life up to this point. Not pastries, that is. I've always been a good cook, but never pastries. So you could ask me how to make a brownie right now or a cupcake. I would have no idea where to start. I'd have to Google it, which is what I did here. So I made a pumpkin white chocolate chip cookie, took it to my mom's house, and I had probably 12 cookies in the span of 2.5 days. So I came back. I'm like, damn, those were good. And I just kept making cookies. And I kept making cookies. And I kept iterating the recipe that I found online. I kept just tweaking things. And by the time I get to, say, February of 2019, I was like, whoa, these are incredible. And I feel like I have enough experience in life to monetize this. Like, who wouldn't want to buy this? This is amazing. And so at that point, the idea was really put into motion. And so I formed the legal entity on May 1st, 2019. But that's where it started. It just started off with wanting to eat pumpkin flavored desserts. And it snowballed into idea. And that's really how it started.
Later, we spoke about what was important to Brad and Lion Cubs Cookies when it comes to differentiating their cookies, serving them fresh.
My biggest thing from the start was a premium cookie served right out of the oven. Because I was like, okay, there's people that sell cookies all around Columbus, but there's no one serving a truly premium, best-in-class product the way it should be served. You can go to coffee shops all around Columbus. You can go to bakeries all around Columbus and get a cookie that's been sitting there for God knows how long. And every time I'd eat these cookies, it was just like everyone else when you're a kid. Like, when do you eat them? You eat them pretty quickly after they come out of the oven. This is the experience I'm trying to recreate around this business.
Josh and I had a great time chatting with Brad, and we hope you enjoy the conversation just as much as we did. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get the show on the road. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here. And for the first time in a while, I think we've got both me and Josh in the booth. Josh, how you doing?
Good, dude. It's been hard to line up you as this new father who's just sitting at home taking care of his child all day long.
Yeah, babies, man, you would think that they would learn to take care of themselves quickly. They do not. But so new father, that's fun. So today on the show, we've got Brad Kaplan joining us. And Brad is the founder and CEO of Lion Cubs Cookies. What started as an idea Brad had while at the Fisher College of Business, Go Bucks, quickly grew from a one-man show to a full business for Brad, complete with recipe developers, bakers, and drivers. Brad has had a ton of success growing through Instagram, word of mouth, and other avenues. Lion Cubs Cookies makes cookies that are truly unique to Columbus. You know, and this is something that I think was, when I was reading and looking up on the business, it kind of reminded me of a couple places I've seen in places like New York City and others that have a lot of these kind of cookie shops and bakeries. So I'm excited to be chatting with Brad today about his journey through entrepreneurship, the nuances behind a great cookie, and a whole lot more. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Brad.
Thanks for having me. And I brought some of these cookies with me. So if at any point during the show you want to dive in.
I tell you what, I got a wife who just had a baby a month ago who will probably be super excited about cookies. So,
yep.
Yeah. So absolutely will.
You could pop the top on it, dude, and then eat them and describe them. I watched a Joe Rogan podcast today. He's doing pretty well. He ate an entire pizza while on his podcast. And I guarantee they got more downloads than we're going to get on this.
Well, I think it's mostly because of the guy and not because of eating pizza.
Yeah, he was interviewing Elon Musk, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We got Brad.
So Brad, one of the first places we like to start is just get a little bit of background on yourself, kind of your story, how you ended up in this position, right? And we go as far back as like, hey, have you always lived in Columbus?
No. So I was born in Cleveland and I went to Ohio State. I was born on the west side of Cleveland in 1990. Mm-hmm. I went to Ohio State for my undergrad. Started that in 2009 and then moved back to Cleveland in 2014. And I was in Cleveland for exactly 3 days on the dot before I moved back to Columbus once again in August of 2017. At that time, I was a civil engineer. That's what my bachelor's was in. I have a minor in Spanish. Don't ask me. Oh, I should say, don't ask me why. Why is because I wanted to stay in college longer. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to prolong my time there.
Yeah.
How's that? So I was an engineer for 3 years in Cleveland. My company transferred me down to Columbus in August of 2017. The reason I moved down was I wanted to go to business school. So I got accepted to Fisher. I took night classes. So I was working full time and taking night classes at Ohio State. So it was about halfway through business school where the whole cookie journey started. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the long story short of how we got to the start of Lion Cubs.
Yeah. So I'm curious, right? Like, how does an engineer just decide, okay, you know what? Cookies.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to do my own thing. I didn't know what. And so my first business ever, I was about I don't know, 10 or 12 years old, somewhere around there. And it was not a legal business. But so here's what it was. Me and my brother, who's 2 years older than me, my dad lived next to a golf course. And there was woods in between my dad's apartment and the golf course. And so me and my brother would go into the woods. One of us would go up to the top of the hill where you could see the tee off. And the other person would go down like 250 yards down and hide in the woods. And so the person up near the tee off, we both have walkie talkies and be like, yo, it's going left. And then we kind of see where it land and be like, all right, go.
Go get the ball.
Run out, take the ball. And we amassed hundreds of those balls. And so how do we make money doing that? Well, we would go back after we'd get a couple hundred balls, we'd put them in egg cartons. We'd go to that same tee off with egg cartons full of balls and sell them back to golfers. We only got caught once doing it.
That's ridiculous. I would never hit the ball into the woods, by the way. I golf a lot. I never hit the ball in the woods. Doesn't happen.
I believe that.
Yeah.
But it didn't even have to go into the woods. As long as it got just veered left towards
the green, they would snatch them up.
We did sometimes. So, but it just had to veer to the left. So I always want to do my own thing. And
that's
the
redistribution of wealth, by the way. That's how it's
kind of is. Like, but except stealing from the rich and selling back to the rich.
Right. Yeah. You know, you're just redistributing the wealth. That's, I mean, you know, that is exactly what people talk about doing in America. So I love it.
Yeah. So that was business number one. And then with Lion Cubs, you know, engineering was fine. It was never something I saw myself doing forever. And when I started business school, I didn't really have a plan after. It was really, I trusted that throughout the process of doing it, I'd figure out what would be my next step after business school. And halfway through business school, I was getting ready to go to my mom's house. It was November 2018. And I love pumpkin stuff more than anyone. Mm-hmm. And so
we're like prime season for you.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah. Big time. Big time. And it was prime season when I started there. It was Thanksgiving 2018. And so pumpkin pie, obviously, but I was like, I want to try something different. So I just Google pumpkin desserts and I see pumpkin cookies. And I've never baked anything in my life up to this point. Not pastries, that is. I've always been a good cook, but never pastries. So you could ask me how to make a brownie right now or a cupcake. I would have no idea where to start. I'd have to Google it, which is what I did here. So I made a pumpkin white chocolate chip cookie, took it to my mom's house, and I had probably 12 cookies in the span of 2.5 days. So I came back. I'm like, damn, those were good. And I just kept making cookies and I kept making cookies and I kept iterating the recipe that I found online. I kept just tweaking things. And by the time I get to say February of 2019, I was like, whoa, these are incredible. And I feel like I have enough experience in life to monetize this. Like, who wouldn't want to buy this? This is amazing. And so at that point, the idea was really put into motion. And so I formed the legal entity on May 1st, 2019. But that's where it started. It just started off with wanting to eat pumpkin flavored desserts. And it snowballed into idea. And that's really how it started. Just curiosity. I didn't sit down one day and be like, how can I make money?
Right.
Cookie seems brilliant. Who hasn't done that before? Like, it was just curiosity. It turned into a hobby. And then the hobby turned into a vision. And then the vision turned into reality over time.
Yeah. So it's a common theme I see with a lot of entrepreneurs is like, they're the kind of person that takes that, you could call it that next step, but it's like some people would say, you know, they're the type of person that's going to go too far, right? They just keep, it's almost an obsession, right? Like where it's like, okay, hey, I'm just going to keep trying to be better at this. And I love this. I'm going to keep doing it. And suddenly you got a business.
Yeah, 100%. And one thing that it's a detriment to me, but it's also a positive, and it goes along with what you were just saying, is an obsession. And what spurred that obsession is this impulsive nature I have. Mm-hmm. And so that can get you in trouble sometimes, but it also just keeps you going because you get so tunnel vision on this thing you're working on. And you don't even know to look left or right. You're just going straight ahead the whole time.
Yeah. So, and I saw some type of statistic somewhere. I'm going to quote it and butcher it and then not reference the actual source material, but it was something about how entrepreneurs have a much higher preponderance of ADHD, which tends to come with impulsive decisions and obsession and like, wouldn't call it manic behavior, but that kind of just, I remember it was a podcast from the Bonobos founder. I was listening to a podcast with the Bonobos founder and he's actually like, you know, he talks about mental health a lot because he's got more serious issues, but the overall summary was like, hey, like this is a tendency for entrepreneurs is to get obsessed. But so coming back to the story we're talking about today. So we start a business, right? How do you go from cooking cookies in your kitchen to got a shop, got a place, got recipe developers? Like, what's that next step?
So the first step is just getting the recipe right. And that took place in my kitchen. When I first started, I had no equipment at all. I was creaming butter with a fork, which if you know anything about baking is really, really difficult. It took like 45 minutes just to cream butter. And then eventually I got a little stand mixer. And then eventually I got some mixing bowls. And eventually I got a whole prep table. And before you knew it, my kitchen, and I have pictures of this that are on Instagram, my kitchen and my living room looked like a commercial kitchen, but it wasn't organized at all. There's just stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. So number one was the recipe. And then once I got that right, and I had so many people trying cookies, and my biggest thing from the start was a premium cookie served right out of the oven. Because I was like, okay, there's people that sell cookies all around Columbus, but there's no one serving a truly premium, best-in-class product the way it should be served. You can go to coffee shops all around Columbus. You can go to bakeries all around Columbus and get a cookie that's been sitting there for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. And every time I'd eat these cookies, it was just like everyone else when you're a kid. Like, when do you eat them? You eat them pretty quickly after they come out of the oven. This is the experience I'm trying to recreate around this business.
Well, if you're saying that, I'm guessing these are fresh. So I'm going to eat one because I don't want to miss out on the experience.
Well, that's a good point too. There's two things going through my head. Like, well, I don't want to interrupt the flow of the journey, but you get the recipe right. Do you get it right for all flavors or just pumpkin flavor?
Just like one. And then I do a chocolate chip cookie. Mm. And so what we do now, and this has been a cornerstone of the business from even when I was starting off as a pop-up, is we don't serve cookies that are more than 2 hours old. And we have systems built around that. So we could walk in the shop at any time right now and you'd say, Brad, how old is that cookie right there? Give me 5 seconds. I'd look around a little bit. The systems we have, I'd say that's been out for 55 minutes. So freshness was always key. And that was the cornerstone of the idea, was awesome ingredients right out of the oven.
Yeah. I mean, because we have like, I mean, Cheryl's cookies, for example, is they got to be national. I mean, I always had them here in Ohio, but like one of the best cookie companies you could probably think of in all of the US start here in Columbus. So you to come and say, hey, I'm going to make a cookie without that differentiating factor, it's like what really separates you guys. But that's that's like a testament. It's pretty profound of a statement.
Yeah. And we've built our brand all around freshness. So when you go to the store, there's this big neon sign in the window that says truly fresh. And we kind of tell a little story along the wall. Like, what does that really mean? What does truly fresh mean? Well, it means 2 hours out of the oven. So, and no matter how big or small we were or we will get, I think that'll always remain a cornerstone of the brand. And you mentioned Cheryl's and, you know, what she was able to do with Cheryl's before she sold the 1-800-Flowers. And then even after with C. Kruger's is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I was never trying to be her. I was always cognizant of other people making cookies, but I was never using that as a measuring stick of where I was or what I wanted to be. I had a vision in my head. And I just knew what other people were doing. And I knew what I was doing was a little bit different. And so that's all I had to be. And I always thought that way.
Yeah. And I just tried one. I tried a chocolate chip. I'm a very classic cookie guy. Oh, yeah. I like the classic cookies. And got to say, nice, crunchy exterior, gooey center, like exactly what you're looking for in a big, thick cookie, right? Like, because there's different styles of cookies. You know, you got like the thin, like that's a cracker type cookie. That's a big, thick cookie. And that's exactly what you're looking for from that experience.
That was Mike's nickname in high school too, is big, thick cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got engineering going on. You're doing night MBA classes. You're making cookies. You figure out you're going to go down this path. Where are you at in the MBA journey at that point? How do you roll down work full time? Or maybe you're still working, I don't know, and then ramp up production. Yeah. What does that transition look like?
I was a busy guy. And still working full time. I didn't quit my job until May of 2020. And I sold my first cookie in December 2019, actually 2 weeks before I graduated. And so I was working full time and I had a lot of responsibility at my prior job. And I was trying really, really hard in business school. So in my undergrad, I kind of just, you know, messed around like any other college kid. I did what I needed to do to get by. I partied a lot. I even got kicked out of my dorm as a freshman, first quarter. I kind of wear that as a badge of honor. Second quarter, I lied. And I graduated business school, top of class too. And I graduated early. So I was taking a lot of classes and it goes back to the obsession that you talked about earlier and the impulsivity that I just couldn't stop working on it. So there are a lot of late nights, especially early on. And that's definitely tapered off as we've grown. I've learned to be more productive with my time, but it didn't seem like it at all that I was working till 1 and 2 in the morning at times. Cause there were nights, especially when I moved out of my house into a commercial kitchen, which I moved into a commercial kitchen before I ever sold a cookie. I was just betting on myself that I knew this thing was going to work. And I knew that I would need the ability to scale up at least to that next step rather quickly. And I wouldn't be able to do that outside of my house. So I would sometimes go to work and I'd leave work around 4:30, 5 o'clock. And class would start around 6 or 6:15. So I'd go home, eat real quick, go to class. Class would let out around 9:30 or 10. And some nights I'd go right to the commercial kitchen because I didn't know how to use commercial equipment. I never used an oven that's, you know, the size of those huge TVs behind you there. And I never used these 60 quart mixers before. And I've never made large batches and learned how to do it without making mistakes. So I'd be there till 1 or 2 in the morning sometime, go home, wake up, go to work around 7, 7:30, rinse, wash, repeat. And it was like that for weeks, sometimes months at a time. So I was balancing that, but it wasn't stressful to me, to be honest. Like I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Sometimes I miss those days. Sometimes I work late just to get that kind of adrenaline going again, especially when you're in growth mode, which is kind of where we are right now, is like entering in this next phase of growth that we're getting into.
Yeah. One transitionary point that I always like to get details on. It's like, when did you move to that first employee, right? When did it become more than just, you know, just you doing your thing?
Yeah.
And how did you go about starting to scale that?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer that. I'm going to go about 2 months prior to that. So before I ever sold a cookie, I had my first pop-up at High Poke's 3-year anniversary. I know the founder of that and he knew what I was doing. He's like, hey, come out, bring some cookies for our 3-year party. I show up with 24 cookies to a 3-year party and I left with probably like 6-7 leftovers. And I was giving those away. So the first time I ever introduced my cookies to the public, in air quotes, I couldn't even give away 24. So I was a little bit discouraged by that. And it was at that point, like I was just moving into my commercial equipment. So like the first ever doubt creeped into my mind. But now let's fast forward to December. I do the first pop-up December 14th, 2019. That pop-up was in like October 2019. After the first pop-up, I hired my first employee because I advertise, am I allowed to swear?
Sure.
I advertised the shit out of out of what I was trying to do. And I had amassed like 1,400 followers on Instagram before I ever sold a cookie, which at the time I was really proud of and I still am proud of. So after the first pop-up, I sold 300 cookies in a span of 3 hours. And even at that point, I wasn't allowed to bake on site. So I was baking at my commercial kitchen and we were driving them back and forth. We'd come out of the oven, we'd put them in hot boxes, we'd drive them there. There'd be a line, we'd sell them. We'd run out in 15 minutes. The line would just get bigger and bigger as they waited for more cookies. Next batch would show up. So it was after that first pop-up, I'm like, okay, I need help with this. Because at that time, it was just me and my mom and my brother were helping me out. So literally, it was after the first pop-up, I had my first employee. And then we got, after the second pop-up, hired another one. After the third, hired another one. So it quickly went from 0 to 3 or 4 employees in the span of a month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah. And then from selling to pop-ups to location, right? That's got to be a big jump.
Oh, yeah.
So talk us through that. What happened there? When did you decide to make that type of transition?
Sure. So those pop-ups occurred pre-COVID. We had 6 pop-ups at COVID. And every single time it just got bigger and better at the North Market. Like it was crazy. The line would wrap around the entire North Market and go out the door. Mm-hmm. It was nuts. So then COVID hit and we don't have a space to sell cookies out of. We can't do pop-ups anywhere because everywhere's closed. We can't do pickup because it's a gated barbed wired fence in a not great neighborhood. So it just wasn't something we could do. So at that point we enter what I like to call like phase two maybe of this business journey, which was delivery. I was like, okay, we can do delivery. But we did delivery in a really, really unique way. And I won't get into the details of that, but what was really impressive about that is we did our own drivers, our own technology, this crazy ass ordering system that somehow people, you basically had to pre-order cookies days in advance to be delivered at a specified time frame that we couldn't tell you exactly when. It'll just be sometime between 6 and 9 to these areas. So we did delivery and delivery really took off. Mm-hmm. So that was about April 2020 that we launched the delivery service. So by May, it had taken off so much. And I'm like, hey, I can support myself on a very, very, very small salary. I was only paying myself $2,000 a month at that point. And I didn't pay myself for 5 months after I quit. But it was once I quit my job and I was like, okay, this can really be something, which is what prompted me to quit my job and I can support myself. And then, so that's May. Then fast forward to October is when we signed the lease for Grandview. Mm-hmm. And so I spent months looking for the perfect location. It wasn't like really scary for me at all. It was just like, I had so much confidence that this was going to work. And Columbus didn't have anything like that at the time.
Yep.
So, you know, October 2020, we signed a lease and we open up in Grandview where we are right now in June 21. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of how we got to location number one. And you know, location number two is set to open early next year with plans for more on the way after that.
Yeah. And so...
And COVID was what? Was that January 21 or January 20?
2020.
Yeah.
Yeah. March, it was November. It March was like December. Like, so first inklings of like, this is going to be bad is December 2019. And then March,
March was shut down.
Yeah, it was the weekend of the Arnold, actually.
Yep.
Because I remember that was our last pop-up because they canceled the Arnold. And we're like, damn, we have a pop-up this weekend. Will anyone show up? A lot of people showed up.
I feel old losing track of time. Like, when was this? When was COVID? Like, that seems like something I should know pretty specifically.
It was just such a blur, though.
Yeah. But so when we look at the whole kind of overall picture here, one of the things I'm curious about is, right, like you mentioned the Instagram. Portion of this. Was most of these conversions coming from that Instagram path? Like, how were you getting this in front of people?
All Instagram.
So like build that bet. So that seems like a pretty key like step in your process is like, hey, committing to doing that.
And all organically driven or were you doing any type of paid to push it out there?
So I was doing paid. And so it was very, very strategic what I was doing early on. Because I was at my house. I'm like, well, how can I get these cookies in front of people? So every Friday for probably 2 months straight before we open, I called it Free Cookie Friday. And I'd take my best photos that I would just take on my phone. I'd make that photo when I'd run an ad. And it's just a free cookie Friday. It was like the first thing you see on the ad. And it's really, really enticing picture of like, whoa, what is this? Like, I've never seen this before because no one has seen these types of cookies in Columbus before. So I'd run an ad. I remember the first ad, I got like 25 comments and I felt like God. I'm like, oh my God, I got 25 comments and 43 likes. Like, this is sweet.
Yeah.
Got a couple followers out of it. And then someone would win. Now I'd always take a screenshot of their feedback and repost it, rinse, wash, repeat. And before then, you know, by the last ad I ran before my first pop-up, I probably had like 300 or 400 comments. I could probably go look, but so it was just paid ads on Friday. And then I just post random stuff throughout the week, like 2 or 3 times throughout the week. And then a paid ad ran on Friday just to get that in front of as many people as possible.
Hey everybody, Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus, and we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
So it's interesting to me because it's like a lot of people, I think, start with, well, I got to make money, right? And you're investing not only the cookie, right, and giving away your product for free, but paying to advertise to give away your product for free, right?
And which can only work if your product is good. So quality.
Yep. And I knew it was.
A lot of confidence your lifetime value is going to pay off that customer acquisition cost.
Yeah.
And is this your own money that you're investing? Or did you bring in investors?
No, it's just me behind this. So my brother has a 5% stake as well. It was he and I that started this. I was always the operator. I was the one that drove it. So I have 95% of the company and I'm the only one who has an operational role and it's always been that way. Mm-hmm. But year one, we had spent, you know, $20,000 before we ever sold a thing, which isn't that much really in the world of business. I mean, it's still a lot of money, but it was nothing to me because I was always so confident that people were going to buy this. And all I had to do was get them to try this once. If they like cookies, then they're going to be a customer of ours was my thought behind it. And, you know, that has remained true for the most part up until now and very much so at the beginning.
Yeah. I think that that's an important note, right? It's like, hey, if you believe you've got a good product, if you believe that what you are providing to the world has value, right? That first time giving it away for free, right? Can really early on drive a lot of business for you in the future. But you got to be willing to invest and take that risk. So
you lose 20,000 in year one, which the first full 12 months was from what dates?
So that would have been January 1st, 2019 to December 31st, 2019. Because I had one day of sales in 2019. That was December 14th, 2019. So, you know, the investments in equipment, investments in getting ingredients, my rent at the commercial kitchen, running ads, that totaled $20,000. In 2019. So 2019 is the only year we ever lost money. We've always been pretty profitable.
So 2020 profitable, 2021 and continued growth year over year over year.
Yeah, every year was significant, especially from 2019 to 2022. Every year we at least doubled sales, sometimes more.
But then you move from pop-up to retail and pop-up even delivery. Like there's some element of this. I'm kind of coming to the customer a little bit more, but now it's I'm full in, the customer's got to come to me. And so that transition for you guys, I'm assuming it was a bit challenging, or how did you handle that? And how do you handle the inventory turns and keeping things fresh at 2 hours and controlling costs inside of the store?
Yeah, so I'll start with the first question there. You know, how do we handle that? I don't know if there is much of a plan per se. I think it was more so a vision of what the in-store experience had to be. And the first thing that it had to be was from a product level. Well, it's got to be fresh. Because even when we were doing deliveries, like we had a 3-hour delivery window. So the 2-hour rule technically wasn't in effect then. But even if you're at the end of that window, your cookies were always still warm. So we had a way to keep them fresh, even when we were doing a long night of deliveries. So that was number one. And more so, it's just, okay, how can we create a really cool, unique experience in store? And the emotion that I was always in my head, I'm trying to elicit is the nostalgia that you feel when, let's say, you're 8 years old and your mom, your grandma takes those cookies out of the oven and you're just you know, you're pumped up for those cookies and you can't wait. And like, that's what I was always trying to recreate in store. That was the one thing I kept in mind was going into retail, is just creating that nostalgic childhood experience of a fresh cookie. And I think we were very successful in doing that. And the second question of how do we manage, you know, inventory turns and waste with a 2-hour rule? Well, we have developed systems and we've been very, very technology focused, even from the very beginning. You know, the appetite to use technology was evident when we went to delivery, when we built our own delivery system. It was basically like DoorDash, and you'd get notifications from us and you could look at us on a map when we're coming. We did that all ourselves. So we use a lot of technology to help with that, and we're continuing to use technology to hone in on that more and more and more. But long story short, it's relatively simple. If you're finding yourself timing out of cookies, like at the end of 2 hours, mm-hmm. you're baking too much. If you find yourself running out of cookies before that 2 hours, you're not baking enough. And so, you know, we train all of our bakers to use the system we've created, and we've got really good at it, where we've minimized waste pretty significantly to this point. And what we do with that waste is we donate a large majority of that to Food Rescue, and or we'll take cookies around town or like to neighbors and just drop them off. Here you go. So we try to avoid just tossing stuff as much as we can. Obviously, there still is some of that. You can only avoid it so much, but that's what we do. And we're actually making a very, very, very significant investment in custom-built technology to help manage that waste right now. I actually have a buddy who works on Wall Street at a hedge fund. He's a quant. So he like writes algorithms and does predictive forecasting. So he actually wrote me this algorithm and made a model that helps us predict our inventory. And it's super, super, super accurate. And we're just continuing to build that out right now. So
I get myself a Wall Street guy.
Seriously.
Too bad they don't grow on trees.
Right.
But no, I mean, yeah, it's funny because, you know, I don't think most people would think about a cookie company having an algorithm for how often they need to turn over their inventory. I don't think that's something that most people would think when they're like, oh, I'm going to start a cookie company. Taking that new perspective and kind of applying it to a different business model that maybe people haven't really thought about it. That's how things change, right? That's innovation.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, what are the current initiatives you guys have you're working on? Obviously, the new location is a big part of it, an expansion. Oh, yeah. But outside of that, like, what other initiatives are you working on? And what is the future vision for the business? Is it a Columbus local? Is it a expand it to other cities? Like, mm-hmm. do you have that thought out?
Yeah. So starting off with the initiative. So the things that we are really focusing on right now as a company, and there's a couple of things that we do really, really well. So operations, we do incredibly well, and it's leveraging technology to do that. Like, we're very sophisticated for how small we are. We have lots of integrated technologies that are all speaking together in real time. So that was a focus early on. And now we're really focusing on two things. Number one, it's our team. I'll always have a focus on team and culture, because that should always be the founder and CEO's role. No matter how big you get, no matter how small you are, culture is always the job of the CEO, period. So one thing I'm doing right now is what I call the plus 100. So I think what happens in business a lot is I like to call it a spectrum of negative 100 to plus 100 when you're talking about your team. Because negative 100 is what you hear, accountability. You need accountability. People need to do their job and they should be reprimanded if they don't. Well, that's the negative 100. People don't focus enough on the positive 100, and that's recognizing your team and really more so celebrating the success and celebrating when people do things the right way and do things the way that you do them. So right now we are focusing on and building systems that focus on this plus 100. So I'm calling it the plus 100 program. And there's incentives for employees to participate in this and to want to do a good job. So that's a huge focus of mine. And the second big focus right now outside of Worthington and location number 2 is learning how to market. I think up until this point, we really haven't had to market. It's just been brand storytelling and PR here and there and being active on social media. And that stuff's great when you're new. But as you grow and you become more of a commodity, you have to learn what the big boys do in business and what these larger companies do. And we're getting, like, you know, technical here, but, you know, how do you acquire customers? What's the journey a customer goes through from never hearing about you to ideally getting all the way to a high value regular that's coming in all the time? And even more than that, a brand champion, someone that's out there telling their friends about you and getting mm-hmm. other people to come in. So starting to understand how we go from never heard of us to the best customer in the world is something we're really figuring out how to do. And using technology again and bringing in people outside of our organization that know how to do that stuff, which has been key for us, because sometimes you have to understand, especially as a founder, that you don't know how to do everything. And sometimes it's quicker and smarter to make the investment, like you talked about earlier, to bring someone in that can teach you how to do that stuff. So those are our two initiatives. And then to the third question of what's the vision here. So short term is build out Columbus. And after that, I've always said I want to take this as big as it can go. I'm not going to shy away from saying that. And, you know, but the first step is build out Columbus and do that all company owned. And then once we start looking at different markets, it'll probably be a stone's throw away from here. So whether or not that's Dayton, Cincinnati, my hometown, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, something like that, that's a decision I think we'll make in probably 3 years once we see how Columbus shakes out. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to something real quick I said where, you know, I think some people, they shy away from saying, I want to take this as big as possible. Because sometimes some people hear that and they go, oh, that sounds a little bit greedy. But it's not about that for me. I want to do that because of my team. Mm-hmm. And because, especially as we've grown, you know, there's a handful of employees right now, and that number keeps growing, that see what we're doing and have really bought into the vision and really want to make a career out of this. They do not want to leave. And they believe in what this can be as strongly as I do. But the only way I can provide that opportunity for others is by growing. Mm-hmm. And growing's fun. And we all get to learn. And so my goal has always been to get to a point, you know, X number of years from now, you know, ideally in a relative short term, where not just I, but other key employees that have stuck with me a long time and have made themselves extremely valuable. You know, we sell the company and we get the opportunity to maybe retire at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very strong motivator, not just for me, but for the really, really strong team members that I've surrounded myself with.
Yeah.
So that's really why I want to grow. And yeah, it's always been that way. Like, I love creating opportunities for others.
Yeah.
It's really, really rewarding.
You really seem like the type of guy that would want to retire early and just do, you know, nothing. I could totally
not
see
nothing.
You.
I'm
just saying, like, I retire early. Okay. You can tell me you're going to retire early, but I got a feeling you're going to be cooking something.
Something. I love the idea of being able to do
whatever I want to do,
which is probably like, that's the impetus for wanting to be an entrepreneur, a part of it. Like, mm-hmm, I want to do whatever I want. I want to call my own shots. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that getting to retirement super early, it's like, that's a whole nother level of calling your own shots.
Yeah.
And I don't want that for just myself. I want that for other people. I don't feel really good. You know, that mm-hmm emotion, I look at it as an emotional investment in what we're doing right now. The stress we put ourselves through, the long hours, the constant learning new things, it's an investment that we're making for the emotion that we're going to have X number of years from now, where it's like, holy shit, we did it.
Yeah.
Everything we've been talking about, we fucking did it. And that's going to be really cool.
Will you bring on investors at any point, like the lease obligations and the working capital as you continue to scale and as you start to ramp up the digital marketing, going into new markets and making the same presence that you've had here within the heart of Central Ohio is going to probably require some upfront costs and deeper losses. Have you already mapped that out, and are you going to continue to self-fund it through your own cash flow, or?
As much as I possibly can. So whether, you know, my first vehicle for capital will be debt and our own cash flows. We've had conversations with investors, more so like them reaching out to us. And the answer is usually pretty similar for me. It's for what we have in front of us right now, we can fund this through debt and through cash flow. Because we're not ready to take on a huge amount of money. We're just not. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone were to say, okay, I want to invest $10 million in your business, I would say, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. We're not ready to spend $10 million. We're ready to spend $500,000 on Worthington, and we're ready to spend, mm-hmm, you know, several hundred thousand dollars more on number three. But beyond that, we don't have the systems built to go much further than that right now. We're just focusing on what we have in front of us. I don't rule out the possibility of getting there. And I'm going to avoid it like the plague, because equity is gold, especially when you're talking about a sale, which, mm-hmm, you know, we were just talking about. You know, if me and several other key employees have equity when it comes to having a realistic possibility to sell your business, that's, yeah, invaluable to me. But, you know, obviously, if we get to a point where, like, man, if we only had $10 million right now and we could really increase the value of our company with it, and I can maintain the decision rights that I think are necessary for us to grow, then, yeah, I would never rule it out. And you would never say never to anything, really, in business.
Yeah. Well, Brad, I think that's a good place to kind of head towards some of our last questions of the show, but it's been great talking to you so far, learning more about Lion's Cup Cookies. First one, got any advice for our listeners? Now, most of those people, right, they're tuning in because they want to hear about businesses doing things in Columbus. They want to hear about that entrepreneurial journey. So that kind of perspective, what advice would you have for them?
There's a lot, but mm-hmm, I'll focus on what's helped me. And I think sometimes when people listen to entrepreneurs talk, they sometimes make the mistake of hearing what they say and say, oh, that's the golden ticket. That must work for everyone. That's not the case. I can only tell you what's worked for me. And there's really two things. Number one, you have to be honest with yourself. on what you want to do, especially when he talks about how do you want to spend your time. I think some people have these great ideas and they start working on them, but they're not honest with themselves with how hard they want to work on this and how passionate they are. They love the idea of what this could be when it's huge, but maybe they're not really passionate about it. And I think without passion, it's very difficult to grow something meaningful. So just be honest with where your passions are, because your passions will drive that impulsivity I was talking about earlier, and they'll drive that ability that you might have to turn a vision into reality. And then, you know, be realistic with how hard you want to work at that. You know, nothing's going to be given to you in business, and you're going to have some lucky breaks here and there, but at the end of the day, you're going to be the one who drives your own success. And so if you find yourself getting way too stressed out early on, you either need to learn to manage that stress and be comfortable with stress, or understand who you are as a person and say, you know what, this isn't the right avenue for me. Whether that's this isn't the right idea or I'm not going about this the right way. So that'd be number one, is just be honest with yourself. Number two, I would say, is be very confident. There's this phrase I like to use. It's, you know, there's a fine line between arrogance and confidence. And I'm of the mindset that you have to ride that line. You need to be very careful not to cross over into arrogance, but you need to be hyper confident, especially when you're leading a team of others, which, you know, in the restaurant industry, you're never going to be able to do by yourself. It's a very labor intensive industry. And I have definitely seen firsthand how, especially those close to me, have fed off that confidence and have used that to make themselves more productive and have used that to embolden the vision they have within themselves and to believe in the vision you have for the company and to start to see that vision as their own. They feed off that confidence. You can't ever let them see if there's doubt. Even if there is some, hide it. And so that would be my other piece of advice, is be really, really confident about it, but don't make it fake. Because if you're fake confident, then again, that kind of goes back to being honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. But you'll know it when you're like, this is going to work. Yeah. I feel like, you know, you guys, your podcast is one of the bigger podcasts in Columbus. I think when you started this, you probably weren't like, I don't know if this is going to work. You had a vision, you probably believed in it, and you just stuck with it. Mm-hmm. So that would be my two biggest pieces of advice.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of relates back to a piece of my advice my dad always gave me, which was, he said, the captain never says, oh shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
People are going to look to you when things are getting tough. Well, how are you reacting?
Right. You guys have probably seen Saving Private Ryan, right?
Yeah.
All right. So famous scene. I shouldn't say famous scene. There's a scene where early on, Tom Hanks and the whole crew are going through a field, and all the soldiers are kind of complaining about things, and they're calling it griping. So they're all griping, and they call it griping, and they go, yeah, captain, we don't ever hear you gripe. And he goes, you never gripe downhill. You only gripe uphill.
Yep.
And so I remember like thinking back on that, because if the leader is complaining or griping or showing a lack of confidence, everyone picks up on that. And that's kind of how you erode culture, by complaining about things and not being confident. But if it's always like, this is great, we're going to do these things, here's all the accolades we have to support this confidence, and here's all the great things we've done that support why we should be confident, everyone picks up on that.
Yeah. 100% true. 100% true. Our last question of the show, Brad, centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that phrase for a show about entrepreneurs, business leaders, what do you think of when you hear it? How does it apply to your life and career?
It's actually really comforting to hear you say that, live uncomfortably, because I think what I was saying before with a couple of the pieces of advice I'd have for any aspiring entrepreneur, when I was talking about managing stress, I said, you either need to learn how to live with that stress, or you need to just accept that this is too much for you. And so when you're saying live uncomfortably, I think of learning how to live with that stress. And my mentor told me very early on, at a point when I was getting too stressed out, he said, you need to become comfortable with being stressed out. You need to learn how to do it. Because if you're running a growing company, you will always be stressed out because you're constantly learning how to do something new, and you're constantly a little bit unsure of yourself. So that creates stress. You ask yourself, is what I'm doing the right move? Is spending all the money to open up a store in Worthington the right move? Just, you know, early on, I see every little thing and I'm like, what am I going to do? The business is going to fail. And that's just not the case. So not just looking at every little thing that might go wrong and letting that rule your life. It's living uncomfortably, like you said, and getting comfortable with living uncomfortably. So I think it's a really cool phrase. Kudos to you guys for coining that. It's so true.
Thank you. And Brad, thanks so much for joining us and talking about Lion's Cup Cookies. Been great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah, and Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to learn more about Lion's Cub,
Everyone gets it wrong.
That's the last question too. Where did the name come from?
Oh, yeah. So don't feel bad about getting that wrong. Everyone gets it wrong. We actually made this TikTok one time kind of explaining how
I was
to say
so
it.
Good the whole time. I had it every time. And then the last one.
Yeah, Lion Cubs Cookies. So pretty simple. It's what my dad called me when I was a kid. And so here, I'll
take off my, you can see my hair here. I got really wild, thick, crazy hair. And so I had this thick hair and my dad would be like, oh, it's like a lion's mane. I always had crazy energy, which kind of led me to steal golf balls. And I was getting in a lot of trouble as a kid. So, you know, rambunctious like a lion cub, hair like a lion's mane. And so I thought it was a name that was super, super unique. And it is. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would resonate with who our core customer would be. And so far, so good on those fronts.
Right on. Yeah. And if you want to learn more about Lion Cubs cookies, you can go to
LionCubsCookies.com. You can go to at LionCubsCookies on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. You can go to our website. There's a bunch of FAQs, kind of tells the story of how we got here. Shoot us an email at hello@LionCubsCookies.com. We're super responsive there and also in our DM. So yeah, fire away. We love, one of our core values is customer connection. Reach out. We love connecting with our community.
Fantastic. And again, appreciate your support. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to hear more interviews just like this one, hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. It'll make sure you never miss an episode. And we'll talk to you next week.